Today I want to talk about turning our lives around. Many times in our lives we will experience unexpected inputs. Some of those inputs will feel like gentle breezes of warm wind coming from an unexpected direction, and they can pleasantly surprise us. Sometimes these inputs will seem like us running into brick walls, traveling at full speed. Other variations will include being hit by what feels like lightning, coming out of the blue, not storm clouds where we might expect them, but in fact coming out of the blue and catch us totally by surprise. Being knocked out of balance is going to occur many, many times during our lifetimes, and in fact starts very early in our lifetimes, maybe even before we're born. If we consider as we develop in our mother's wombs that when she experiences anything of an emotional nature or a physical nature that sends her out of balance, we in fact simultaneously will also go out of balance. Her inputs are our inputs. And so if you can just imagine that she experiences something emotional during our 9 months of physical development in the womb that knocks us out of balance, as she regains her balance, we then regain our balance. It's pretty easy to imagine that the start of the labor process just before we're born is us receiving imbalancing inputs, just like she is too. No matter how many children a woman has, that birth process has got to be a series of inputs provided not only by people in her environment, say the delivery staff, the doctor, an expectant father, or family, but also delivered by her to her. And while all those inputs occurring, as far as she's concerned, they are also occurring to the baby. That physical act of coming into the world, coming out of what would have been a pretty balanced state over this 9 months of development, the predictability of what is going on is fairly high in that it's consistent. It's consistent, even though there are going to be variations, of course. But at the beginning of labor, all bets are off. Everything is now changing. The inputs being provided to the mother and by the mother that are affecting the about-to-be-born baby are being imbalancing to the extreme. Not only is there a physical movement of the baby through the birth canal under normal births, in which you can just imagine the physical pressures on that baby, those kind of inputs, as the baby is moving down the birth canal and now is being born, literally these things can be intensified by any drama in that environment. This is certainly true in a case of a cesarean section where there is the perception by the delivering doctor of some sort of physical stress being apparent in the newborn or about to be born, and that necessitates not a natural childbirth, but in fact an emergency cesarean section. So all of that stress in the environment, those hormones, those sounds, those voices, all can be delivered to the child and imprint that child as to what life is about how people, including themselves, need to deal with life, what the rules of life are, not for that moment in time or minutes in time during the birth process, but they become as permanent rules to live life by, to conduct one's life by, even though the information is not being targeted toward the child is nonetheless the recipient of those inputs. Going out of balance, back into balance, out of balance, back into balance is normal. And it's going to happen over the course of our lifetime, literally millions of times. Imagine for a minute that we're newborn children, or we've grown a while and we're in the crib and we want to stand up for the first time. We're in balance sitting down. But nonetheless, because of the modeling of people around us, we decide that we too want to be vertical like they are. So we take that image, and now we're going to try standing. We deliberately give up the state of being balanced to go out of balance as we try to pull ourselves and using our arms or push ourselves using our legs up into the standing position. Depending on our physical skill or development, we may or may not succeed. And then if we don't, we're going to fall and we'll be back sitting in balance until we try again, going out of balance so we can achieve a new state of balance, that is, standing vertically in our cribs. Walking requires a standing person to make a decision to go out of balance. They pick up, if you can just imagine yourself as a young child doing this, you're about to walk for the very first time. You are standing 2 feet, maybe tottering, and you're about to try to take a step. You put all your weight on one foot because you lift the other one off the floor. You went out of this 2 foot model of balance, raise 1 foot off the floor, and swivel your hip and set your other foot down. And if you can do that successfully, you regain balance. Most of us, I presume almost all of us, as we try that for the very first time, we're in balance, we go out of balance, and we fall down. Well, let me try that again. We go through the standing process, take weight off 1 foot, put it all on the one, and 1 foot is in the air, and we move it forward and put it on the ground. And we're going to do this a number of times until we can regain a new state of balance, this higher ideal, which is, hey, I'm 1 step further ahead than I was a moment ago when I was back there. And then we're going to reverse it, lift that other foot, pivot by putting all the weight on 1 foot, and extend the leg out in front of us until we can take another step forward. We go out of balance, into balance, out of balance all the time. If we just imagine that, you know what, we do that, but we've lost sight of it because it is so normal at this point. And the training that we got, very few people say, okay, here, we're going to explain to you how to lift your foot. We're going to explain to you how to swivel your hip. We're going to explain to you how to tighten the muscles in your thigh and your leg and in your calf. And that's not what happens. There's very little verbal data that's delivered to a child, but they do see this process. They do see how this is done. And then they try to do it themselves. Nobody talks about, oh, you're in balance sitting there or standing there, and then you have to make a decision to go out of balance, and then hopefully you're going to regain your balance, and then you're going to do that over and over again. I have to be talking about it today because it pertains to other areas of our lives, not just learning how to walk. But if we can learn how to turn our lives around, maybe using this model of being in balance, going out of balance, getting back into balance in a better condition, maybe it will serve us in some way. If you look at what's normal, I would suggest on the planet, this idea of balance is a natural desired state. There is a tendency, it seems, in most systems to try to get into balance. I think having hopes and desires is also a natural condition. But having hopes and desires leads us to a place where we can become imbalanced by them, because if you have a desire, that says where we currently are is less desirable than where we want to be. So you can just imagine, it's like, oh, I'm comfortable right now. Oh, wait, I just got an idea about something better. Now, all of a sudden, that desire propels me to be willing to give up this current state of balance in an effort to achieve this new state that I want of having something different, being in a different spot, learning something, whatever this new state is. If I make that determination, I have a desire for something that is different than what I'm currently experiencing, I have set myself up to go out of balance. That's not necessarily a bad thing. And in fact, you could make the case, in order to grow, you are willing to expand, to enhance, to be, to know, to do, to have something that is different than what you're currently experiencing. Being willing to grow is recognized in a lot of cultures as a fantastic thing. And so if we can look at what we do and turning our lives around as part of our growth, maybe we can hold it in a different context. So let me back up a little bit and talk about this idea. I'm currently sitting at a table having this conversation. I want to stand up. I'm currently balanced. Let's be clear. I'm currently balanced, but I want to stand up. Well, that space between sitting and standing is an area of imbalance. So how am I going to do it? I'm going to put two hands on this table. I'm going to move my weight forward, my center of gravity. I'm going to lean forward. I'm going to push the chair back with my legs as I stand up, and using both my legs to push me up and my hands and arms pushing off of the table, I am going to come to the vertical position as I now am. That space between being balanced as a sitter and being balanced as a stander, the way I am right now, was this phase, but it happened relatively quickly. I did it slowly because I was talking and I wanted to make the point. But the fact is, that time of imbalance was relatively short, and we think nothing of it because it is so normal to our lives. But it's not always that short, nor is it always that untraumatic. That state of imbalance sometimes is, depending on the input, if we got hit by lightning or ran into a brick wall, would be more challenging than that, and would have lasted longer than that, and would have required some level of adjustment of our perceptions of those inputs. The physicality of balance, imbalance, getting back into balance is not a big deal. As I sit down again, it's not a big deal. We're so familiar with it. Getting knocked down physically, under most circumstances, is going to lead to, I know how to get up again. We're going to get up. If we were to fall, we would know how to get up. We wouldn't be like, I don't know what to do now. I don't know what to do. That process physically seems to be simpler because we've been doing it our entire physical lives. But getting knocked down emotionally, getting knocked down mentally, may not be quite so easy because, on the one hand, the emotional and the mental are not physically apparent. They're not visible. You can't really look at them. You can't really look around and go, oh, what are the factors that will support me in my effort to get back into balance? It's like, I don't see them. I don't see them. But maybe we can use the model that I just talked about of standing up from this desk. So if I were to say that there were different factors, different assets, different resources, different processes that I was using, what are they? Well, my feet are on the floor, and underneath the floor of this house that I'm sitting in Warsaw, Poland, is the ground. So in a matter of speaking, my feet are on the ground. My hands are on the table. My rear end is sitting on the chair. And as I stand up, I am using the ground, I am using the table, I am using my hands, I am using gravity, I understand the play of gravity, I'm using my muscles, arms and legs and hands and so on. Those are the parts that play a significant role in this activity of going from sitting to standing through this phase I'll call imbalance. If I were to look at emotional imbalance, and I've been, if I say I'm emotionally imbalanced or have been by something that occurred or something I thought about, or something I remembered, or something that I just experienced due to an input. That means there, what would take the place of tables, chairs, the ground, my hands and arms and legs, in getting back into emotional balance? What factors would help me? What tools or resources could I turn to and use in order to get back into balance? What would a person stand on emotionally or mentally? What would we push up against, push off of? What other resources would we have access to? What takes the place of gravity in an emotional or mental situation? Just like the physical change of sitting, going to standing, it starts with a desire. A person would have to desire to stand. There would have to be some input, some impulse to stand up. And that desire for something different can't do something that you want to do because you're sitting and you need to stand for it. That desire for something different is what we want to look at as well. If we're going to go through the trouble of standing, why would we bother if there wasn't some value, some reason, some need to stand? If we weren't gaining something, or if we weren't overcoming the potential of loss, why would we even bother standing? We probably wouldn't. Along with that desire for something different, and just having that desire for something different, already leads us to the idea that we would have a belief that something different was achievable. So we've got a desire and a belief. The combination of those two things start to feed this about-to-be-activated behavior. That belief, that desire, and I would say the belief is kind of like an ember in a fireplace, just lightly burning, and making sure or facilitating that with the desire will help keep that ember glowing and ideally move it into the flaming state. So that desire is like the fire burning within a person. Now all of a sudden the belief that it can be there is like adding fuel to that little spark. That's powerful. Turning our lives around involves forming a desire of a new condition. And as we form that, belief is added to it. And if we nurture that desire, nurture that belief, the fire can grow brighter and brighter. So how do we shift our emotional weight? And what does that even mean, emotional weight? I think this could be the time in this process where we make a decision. It could be a time, it could be a place, or it could be both, where we make a decision as to what is going to be. To me, decision is an incredibly powerful, creative step of having what we want. It's an individual decision, not a group decision. It's not somebody else's decision that really can carry the weight or shift the weight from heavy to light. But it is our individual decision as to how things are going to be. Now, you probably have heard over the course of your lives the idea that when somebody's talking about an addiction problem, oh, that person has to hit bottom. Bottom is the pain of a current state that has gotten to the point to bring a person to this decision point where they're fed up with it, they've refused to accept it, and in fact, make a decision, flip the switch, turn the light on that says, no, it's going to be this other way. And that is the beginning of a flood of, to my way of thinking, this healing spirit coming to us to support us in the direction of that new decision, which of course has been put in place because of this desire that we already established. We now direct our energies into this desire through the mechanism of our decision. We have decided what the new reality will be. Powerful. In history classes, this was referred to, this kind of event, in my study of Latin in high school, when Julius Caesar said, the die is cast. This is done. This is how it is going to be. And there was no turning back. If we look at our present condition and previous experiences that have brought us to this moment in time and place, as the ground we stand on, we will be much better off if we accept the place we are as our base as we push off from it toward the ideal condition, this new condition that we imagine, that we desire, that we've decided we will have. We don't have to fight our present condition. We don't need to be at war with our present condition, nor do we have to be running away from our present condition. We can use the present condition as our platform for the launching of us, of our new lives. We can use it as our starting point of turning our lives around. A lot of people want to fight where they are. They want to fight the past. They want to fight their condition. The trouble is, using that energy to fight what is basically a losing battle. Because what is. You can't make what is not be. You can create a new is, but that's creation. That's not destruction. That's not fighting. Creating a new is what we're talking about. But other people think what they have to do is they have to fight the past. They have to fight the current state. They got to go to war with it. They've got to destroy what is in order to have a new. Whoa, wait a minute. That doesn't work. Destroying what is just means you've got a destroyed area. Certain places have been rebuilt in Warsaw, Poland after World War II. Certain places in Warsaw, Poland have been rebuilt after the end of the Soviet occupation. I didn't see those areas where they were still destroyed because I'm here after this rebalancing has already occurred to a large extent. The economy is vibrant. Freedom they're experiencing for the first time in years and years and years is they've come out of this imbalanced state. And so there's a tremendous amount of effort of the newer generations to build anew, create, to grow, to learn, to develop. Only the older generations are still battling the past. And maybe in these circumstances, what happens is the newer generations develop the newer viewpoints, and the older generations will continue these wars until they go to their graves. It's not true for a lot of them, because they are turning their lives around by lightening the load of the heavy weight of their experiences. How do you do that? How do you do that? That's what's interesting to me, and that's what I'm talking about here today. By using past experiences and recognizing they have helped us develop strengths, they have helped us develop our roots, not only into the family, and that's extremely important here in Poland, and in fact, that's one of the reasons we're here in the first place, is because of family, is you can just recognize that because so much communication was prohibited under the Nazis and under the Soviets, that the only place to communicate was within the family. And so family ties, family connections, family roots are extremely strong, extremely healthy, and extremely powerful. And I'm seeing that and experiencing it with them, and it's a fantastic thing how important that is. I think it can set a person in a place where they can gain strengths that a dislocated person who doesn't have a sense of belonging is at a real disadvantage. To be able to look at these past experiences as putting us in a place of building strengths has to be the way to lighten the load, the emotional and mental and physical weights of those past experiences. Before this night is done, I hope to have a conversation with one of my wife's relatives who, as a 7-year-old boy, was taken away from his family and sent to Siberia for 6 years. He is now about 80 years old. Very successful medical doctor. How does a boy of 7 get pulled away from his family, get sent to Siberia for 6 years, come back, live under the Nazis, live under the Soviets, and still maintain a healthy life, build a successful family, healthy, beautiful, loving family, and become a successful doctor under those circumstances? How is it possible that when those inputs, those lightning strikes, and there were multiple, obviously, how does he rebound from that? How does he recover from that? How does he establish a desire? How does he establish this spark that he now feeds belief to in order for it to grow so he can turn his life from those catastrophic experiences into experiences in which he grows a family and is awarded by the Polish government recognition and medals for his work in the country and outside the country, dealing with his specialty of infectious diseases and helping certainly thousands upon thousands of people. He was able to turn his life around. Was it a spiritual power? I think so. His daughter, whose house I happen to be sitting in, told me earlier today that when I was doing this talk, she and her husband, her two teenage sons, and my wife and her parents were going to church, just like they do every Sunday, just like 90-some percent of families in Poland do every Sunday. Is it a connection to this healing spirit, to this divine, to this God energy that we're talking about? Is it that connection that sustained her father in those years as a 7-year-old boy, right on up to now he's an 80-year-old man? Is it that connection to the healing spirit that kept him, his body, his emotions, his mind going no matter what challenge he was faced with? I think the answer has got to be yes. The healing spirit is what can sustain us. Let me go back to the standing, sitting scenario. Clearly, if I said gravity, you would say, oh, I know what gravity is, right? That's that pull toward the center of the earth or push downward toward the center of the earth. Yeah, I am familiar with it. So what gravities do we experience? And are there gravities that we experience as we turn our lives around? I think so. I think there's got to be at least two. These two come to mind. The pull, the magnetic pull of our past beliefs that we've associated with our past experiences. Sometimes you can hear them as can'ts. I can't. I can't. I can't. Don't. 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 Those sorts of things. And the shouldn'ts. The rules that have been laid upon us as controls to our behavior. Also, the past can serve as a push forward. Maybe the model, some image of what could be, the image of what could be becomes the desire. That's what I want to experience. Not what I'm currently experiencing, but I want to experience that. And now all of a sudden that belief and that desire grow together to pull us forward into a different form of gravity. The I can, I want to, I will. So there we are, in between the pull of those two gravities, almost like a tug of war. And so which one wins? Which one succeeds in pulling us either backwards or attracting us forward? The one we focus on. The one we focus our attention on. The one we place our intention on. When we go into harmony with either of those two pulls, it makes that pull more powerful on us and in us, and we mutually attract ourselves in that direction. We have our choice of which gravity pulls us. I like that idea. And if we focus on highest intention that we can imagine, that we can feel at any moment in time, that's as good as it can get. And then we'll improve, and we adjust, and we adjust. And as we make our way from the current state toward this improved state, and then we then again choose another state that we desire, and then we go through the same imbalancing process from balance to imbalance to back into balance and so on, our growth, our movement, our enhancement and expansion of our awareness and our consciousness is going to help us turn our lives around. Fighting the past is not the answer. Creating from our present, giving credit to our past for getting us to the present, and in fact, engendering these ideas, these desires, will put us in a place where we can lighten our load, recognize the strengths that we've developed in these times of challenging inputs, giving us a greater ability to appreciate and focus our attention and intention on the condition that we desire. That's what we want to do. We can allow the divine, the healing spirit, to lift us to this place where spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically, we can have what we want to be, what we want to do, and what we want to have. And as we recognize our focus on what we want and connect to it, we want to help other people have this experience of going into a greater state of balance, a higher appreciation of their connection with the divine, and to be able to light not only their own paths, but the paths of others, just as we're lighting our own path, and ideally, the path of others. That's turning our lives around. And I will bet, before this evening is done, I will discover that a desire to improve his own life, as well as the life of his family, was one of the most powerful energetic patterns that helped him turn his life around. From that 7-year-old boy up to including the work that he does today as an 80-year-old doctor. I would like to end the service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, creator and connection to all that is, thank you for all of our blessings. Thank you for helping us expand our awareness, our consciousness of our experiences as blessings. Help us to recognize that, gain the strength from those experiences, and use them to further our development as conduits of the healing spirit flowing to us and through us, for our good, as well as the good of our families, friends, and complete strangers. And even help us to understand there's no such thing as a complete stranger, because they are in the ocean of God, just like we are in the ocean of God. We're all connected in this healing spirit. Help us to know it. Help us to show it. Thank you. It is so. Amen.